Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 263.
This week on the podcast, coastal liberal elites everywhere were furious about this week's education in horrifying and bizarre gun accessories.
And Trump, clearly studying the elements of story, is now focused heavily on the art of tragic foreshadowing.
Plus, Donald Trump, a grabber of pussies and pussy healthcare.
And West Hollywood Mayor John Heilman stops by because WeHo is just that kind of friendly and adorable small town.
Plus, an old-timey sounding geopolitical battle is playing out in real time in Catalonia.
And Donald Trump has the best feuds. There is nobody with better feuds than Donald Trump.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
Leave us a review. That's what polite listeners
do. Imagine you to be those type of people.
Yeah, we don't have assholes listening to this podcast.
Come on.
Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah.
If you're in California.
Right.
If you're in a crappy state,
happy Columbus Day.
Either way, you're at work because nobody gets these holidays off.
I know. So yeah.
I feel like once we changed it to Indigenous Peoples Day, we should have started to also get it off.
Right. Otherwise, like once we're tweaking holidays, like let's also just like sneak in the day off.
Yeah, this
while
feels
we're at
disrespectful to Indigenous people.
Right?
Like, if we're going to be at work,
right,
are we really thinking about the important contributions Indigenous people made?
No, we're thinking about work.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh.
Before we dive into the news, we wanted to mention I have been writing for a newsletter that is affiliated with an app that's going to be coming out.
Yeah.
But it's a political newsletter that covers one topic in depth every other day. And it's been really fun, and we're trying to cover topics with a comedic bent so that they're fun to read about, but also so that you don't feel stupid in conversation later
right.
when you're not really sure what Trump just changed about birth control.
Right.
So it's worth your while to check it out.
Just go to sparkactions.com.
Exactly. You can have this fun of listening to Brain Trust Live in your inbox.
That's right.
3 times a week.
Yeah.
And the final thing we want to dive into before we dive into all the fun mass shooting news that happened this week is we wanted to play you a clip of the most hilarious thing in audio history, which happened this week. We try not to play Trump's voice.
So gird your loins.
Trigger warning. But it was very important because we were never going to be able to convey how hilarious this was with our own voices.
Right.
And we wanted you to hear it first.
That's right.
Here it is.
We are also praying for the people of Puerto Rico. We love Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico. And we also love Puerto Rico.
That is Donald Trump trying to pronounce the name of a U.S. territory and doing it incorrectly.
No. Right.
And then at the end, as a final jab, he throws in the anglicized pronunciation as if that's the real one. And he was just humoring everyone.
Right.
It's so weird.
What was he doing?
It's weird that
he's so weird.
It's weird that he said that in front of a crowd that was there to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month.
Yes.
But also, who goes to the White House to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month in this White House?
No.
Not the right people.
Really?
And it comes the same week as another exciting PR fail in Puerto Rico, where he was depicted tossing one roll of paper towels into a group of Puerto Ricans in need of supplies. Like it was a basketball.
Yeah.
So he has helped Puerto Rico in that he's delivered one roll of paper towels to people in need.
Yes.
And that is millions less paper towels than I would assume is needed to clean up from this hurricane.
So
but also, something about his body language was just like vaguely demeaning and rude in the process of all of that.
It wasn't so much vaguely demeaning as
fully
it was
demeaning,
like specifically demeaning.
Aggressively demeaning.
Right, yes.
Uh-huh. But it was such a confusing choice for that to be an on-camera moment.
Right.
It was a like, I understand that it was supposed to be a photo op where he was like, see, I'm helping. But, like, the fact that he understands so little about helping that he couldn't even pretend to look like he was helping for 1 minute without insulting everyone.
Do you know what they would really love that he tossed to them like a basketball? Electricity.
Yeah.
That's what.
Elon Musk is trying to toss them that as a basketball.
Yeah.
Like a basketball. But Donald Trump, nowhere in that game.
Nope. Took some selfies while he was there, though.
Well, obviously.
Just to prove that he was helping.
I mean, you want to be careful.
Right.
You want to make sure you fully depicted your time doing a photo op.
I know. It's like, he was going for that whole sort of, like, picture or it didn't happen thing, you know?
He lives his life by that ethos.
Exactly,
it's like tweeting it to make sure that, you know.
If it's not on your Instagram, you weren't there.
Exactly. Him and teenage girls have so much in common.
Right.
Now onto the real news.
Really?
And you heard about it, so that's good.
Yeah.
Another just giant, deadly shooting this week.
Sure.
Another giant, depressing discussion about gun control. not quite coming to fruition.
Yeah.
This was an especially confusing one because there was no political ideology at play, but also no sort of like previous cause for concern in the there were no like sort of known mental health issues with this guy Stephen Paddock.
Right. Even his longtime girlfriend, who is cooperating with police right now, is sort of like claiming as though she didn't really see this coming.
Which is crazy because it was very carefully planned.
Right. I mean, he's the man had 23 guns and things that he could, explosives. I was going to say, he could have made a bomb. So it's like, it wasn't something that he just got angry about last Sunday.
And what's interesting, he had no criminal background. He had a family history of criminality, I guess, because his estranged father was on the most wanted list and had like escaped jail when he was a young child, but it didn't seem like that was something that was like in his life, someone that was in his life necessarily. Yeah. But because of that, there was nothing even in a more restrictive background check system that would have prevented his sale of the sale of 23 weapons to this man. And then on top of that, he had all these accessories. And then we had to learn what those accessories were, which was not information we wanted at all.
Right. I don't like guns having accessories.
No. I don't like guns having people. And then to know that those people have been...
Buy accessories for them as if they're buying their gun like a Birkin bag or something.
Exactly.
Like, no.
Well, and we've been talking...
Don't be doing that.
...a lot about this because of that gun silencer bill.
Yes.
That's getting a vote. This crime was a good example of why you don't want people to have access to silencers. Because when you are the victim of a mass shooting or you're in an area where a mass shooting is taking place, one of the only clues you have as to where to take cover and how to stay safe is the sound of the gun being fired.
That's right.
And so if you don't even have that, then you're just being picked off with no way to protect yourself.
That's right.
It's a public safety, and it's public safety mechanism for police and other in first responders
as well. Of course,
You know, I mean, it's everyone's safety that's at risk with the silencer bill.
Yeah.
But so this was an interesting time for that bill to be on the table.
Yes,
because it made a great case for why it's not.
Well, yes, why it shouldn't be getting passed.
Why it shouldn't be getting passed.
Yes.
What we do know now is we know there were no other shooters. There's no one else involved in this plan. Paddock had tried to buy other exciting kinds of gun accessories that he had not used during this attack, including tracer ammunition, which lights up as it shoots out of your gun so you can watch where it's going.
Yeah. And the only reason that he couldn't get that was because they were out of it. He went to this gun show in Phoenix.
Too many other people
buy
had it.
Exactly. That's apparently the hot ammunition accessory.
It's exciting.
To have.
You need that to kill a deer, or you're just not getting that deer killed enough.
Well, it's more fun because it lights up.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's like fireworks and shooting guns all at once.
Oh, my God.
He had explosives in his car and more ammunition in his car, which indicated to police that he may not have planned to kill himself as he did, because there was so many more supplies left to use.
I was
going to
say, there's a few things that happen when you are an active shooter. You either end up killing yourself, end up in some sort of standoff with the police, or you do escape and end up going to a location B. Ultimately, you're going to be dead at some point as this person. But like, it seems as though he was really angling for going to location B, wherever that was.
Location B clearly had a lot of other exciting things planned for location B because he had left himself plenty of supplies.
Yes.
And he had apparently, they did find a handwritten note in his hotel room with calculations. I was surprised by how far he was from this country music event that he shot up. It was concerning to me that from the 32nd floor, he was able to create that kind of damage.
Yeah.
Well,
apparently he's good at geometry.
I guess so. It was because he was using weapons of war that he could do this.
That too.
You couldn't have done that with a shotgun, but I was kind of surprised by how accurate he was able to be at that distance, how damaging he was able to be at that distance.
Well, and apparently he would have been able to be more accurate if he had those bullets, which was why he was trying to get them.
Right.
Because not just because they're fun and they light up like fireworks, but the reason that you buy those is because they leave a trail.
Right.
So you can see when you're that far away, you can see where the bullets are
landing,
going, because he obviously wasn't able to actually see what sort of carnage he was causing down there. I mean, I'm sure he could see that, like, generally it was like, you know, mayhem down there. But like, had he been able to get these bullets, which are also legal and you can just buy at a gun show, there would have been way more people dead. And there were 59 people dead.
Yeah. And more than 500 injured.
Right.
part of the reason that we've been talking about the most minor possible thing that we can do in terms of gun control is because he was using a bump stock,
right,
which is an accessory we also didn't want to have to know about,
right,
that basically turns your semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon.
Right.
It, like, fires for you and the gun moves back and forth. I don't know.
Half of the Republican senators that got asked about it had no clue what they were. And these are people who, nobody loves guns more than these people do.
No, they
so,
all
like, and they all have them. A lot of people, right, a lot of these Republicans who own guns were like, bump stocks?
Yeah.
Huh?
We didn't know we could be that deadly.
Right. Right. I know.
Yeah. So in any case, the one point of discussion that has been a break from precedent, but not enough of a break, is that on Wednesday, a few Republicans came out and said, we should ban these bump stocks. Now, I have a different plan for gun control that sure involves private industry making money, which they love, and involves nobody really having to take responsibility for anything, which they also love, which I think is the most basic thing that we could do.
Sure.
Which is that we should require gun insurance.
Yeah.
Then a private insurance company could be making money off of all of these people buying guns.
Yes.
What's more American than that?
Nothing.
And
literally nothing.
Second of all, that could protect all of them from the legal ramifications of being asshats. Because if you accidentally shoot your neighbor because you were firing at targets in your backyard,
right,
then you could be like, well, insurance will pay for it. I'm not a criminal. Right. It was an accident.
Yeah.
And then your neighbor doesn't have to hate you. The whole town doesn't have to turn against you. And everything can continue as if you didn't know that you were doing something deadly and irresponsible in your backyard.
Right.
In any case, the NRA sells a kind of gun insurance called arms care, but it's to protect your gun from being damaged in like a flood or like your home fire. It's not to protect the people that you might shoot with your gun.
So I'm talking
about the other kind.
Yes.
And I am seeing I'm seeing an uptick in discussion about that. I'm seeing some petitions online and things like that.
Sure.
But I think this is the simplest way to solve this problem because it allows Congress to frame guns as something you're allowed to have, but that is regulated in the way that cars are regulated.
Right.
Cars are deadly weapons. That's why you have to have insurance. There's almost nothing that's a commonly held deadly weapon that doesn't require insurance for public safety reasons.
Right.
And they could say that they care about public safety by requiring gun owners to purchase insurance.
That's right.
In case of accidental firings. They don't have to buy the kind of insurance for purposeful firings. You know?
No.
I mean, that's not...
I don't feel like anyone would be doing that.
No, exactly. But I mean, like, that is what we should be talking about.
Right.
We are going to talk about anything with Republicans right now. Instead, we're talking about banning bump stocks, which basically means banning something that is already technically illegal because automatic weapons are not legal for civilians.
Yeah, let's create a whole new industry.
Yeah.
Gun
they
insurance
love
industry.
Industries.
It's creating jobs. It's job creation.
The money makes itself. I'm going to start a gun insurance company if no one else does.
Yeah.
This feels like a win-win for private industry and Republicans, which are the only two parties that matter at the moment. So banning bump stock is the very least that we could do, but
it's
different than doing nothing, which is what we've been doing previously. So that's exciting.
Right. Well, and I think that I think the reason that we're seeing them be okay with talking about actually doing this is because it really is ultimately the same as doing nothing. I mean, it's not the same as doing nothing because, like, you could say that had he not had this bump stock, then, you know, less people would have died.
Right.
So, like, that's certainly not nothing. I don't want to, like, you know, belittle the
good
lives
work,
lost,
John
certainly.
John Cornyn.
But I mean,
whatever,
like,
you're real hero.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, really? Like, that's what we're going to be able to sort of finally settle on?
I think that the one thing that this does is it opens the door to them declaring that there is a place for regulation in the gun market. And I think in the same way that, like, the reason I won't accept limitations on late-term abortions, to use an issue that they love to talk about, that's
because
an issue on the left.
Once you start setting any sort of regulations,
once you've set the precedent that women, that there is a place for government regulation when, as it pertains to women's control of their own bodies, you have set a precedent that can be altered and then can be made worse. I think that setting the precedent that there is a place for some kind of gun control that Republicans can agree should exist for public safety reasons and doesn't infringe on their rights as Second Amendment gun holders is a step. It's not a step that's going to prevent mass shootings in the future.
Right. I also think that they feel like, to your point about gun regulation, I think they're going to be able to get around that with this too, in the sense that it's not actually a gun.
Yes.
It's like, it's a thing that you buy for your gun. That is sort of like how they're going to say that they still are not in favor of any actual gun control. They just don't think that you should be having things that you can put on your gun to make them more deadly than the gun itself already is.
It will at least,
which is ridiculous, but like that's what they're going to say, I think.
It will at least prevent them from trying to advance the argument that removing regulations from other gun accessories is part of the Second Amendment.
Agreed.
Which is what they're trying to do right now.
Right. Yes.
So at least there's that.
Yeah.
Here's who came out against it, or for it. John Cornyn.
Yeah.
Who's the number two in the Senate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a
big
deal.
And he owns a lot of guns, apparently, guys.
He's talked about it in the past and now.
Yeah.
Ron Johnson said he had no problem banning the device, but he said he saw it as an extension of the automatic weapons ban, which exists already. And he felt like this was just banning a device that turns your semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon sounds right because you shouldn't have an automatic weapon. We've already decided that.
Yes.
And then a representative, Jeff Duncan from South Carolina.
Right. And he's the guy who was really pushing this silencer bill as well.
He said he was open to debating the bump stock issue,
yeah.
which is, I guess, something.
Right. But he also said they're simple devices that may be hard to regulate. So he's probably just going to sort of decide to, you know, why bother trying?
Yeah, it's the climate control argument.
Right, exactly.
The climate's a mess anyway. No, why bother?
Yeah.
We admit that humans are causing it, but we can't do anything about it, so let's not try.
Right.
With that said, Democrats have started to introduce bills to ban bump stock. Dianne Feinstein in the Senate has done that. She's our big gun control advocate in the Senate. And then there's a Rhode Island Democrat in the House that is doing the same. The bill in the House has 100 co-sponsors, but no Republicans have signed up for it.
Go figure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Feinstein said that she was also going to reach out to Trump and try and work with Republicans on the legislation. It seems like maybe she'll have some luck there if, you know, there's no co-sponsors in the House, but it seems like, you know, some of the senators who we just discussed seem like they would at least be open to talking about it. I have a feeling they will be, just because, like, why not do this thing and then just be able to say that you did? You know, because this is a thing that we have talked about many times on the podcast, that, what is it, 90-some percent of Americans, including 90% of gun owners, basically believe that their guns should be regulated in some sort of way, whether it's through background checks or whatever. So, like, this is a thing that only exists because the NRA is giving money to all of these senators. Just do this. It's basically nothing. And then you can just go tell 90% of Americans who think that their guns should be regulated anyway that you did something.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Yet Mitch McConnell is still not on board.
Sure.
He doesn't want to politicize the investigation into what happened in Vegas.
Well, no.
I mean, that would be terrible.
Mm-mm. No, now's not the time.
No, it's never. Now.
No.
It's never the time because it's always the day after a mass shooting in America.
Exactly.
Every day
is
the day after a mass shooting.
And when it's not the day after a mass shooting, then it's a day that they're trying to do something else totally nefarious.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, like that, oh, we can't deal with gun control today because we're trying to take away your health care.
Yeah,
so we'll get to gun control later.
Exactly. Meanwhile, in the midst of all of that chaos, Trump has been very busy foreshadowing something all week, but we don't know what it is.
Dun, dun, dun.
He said on Thursday that this was the calm before the storm, and then he was asked what he was talking about, and he said, you'll find out.
Oh, God.
And then on Saturday, he was going on about how terrible North Korea is and nothing's been working and blah, blah, blah. But he said, creepily, there's only one way to deal with North Korea. One thing will work.
Oh.
He's mad at Rex Tillerson for having open channels.
I was going to say, newsflash, it's not diplomacy, guys. No. In case you were hoping the one thing that he was referencing.
That we haven't tried yet.
That's not it.
No, not it. So we're sitting on the edge of our seats waiting to find out what terrible catastrophe is about to befall us.
First off, saying it's the calm before the storm and not knowing what he's talking about is just like terrifying generally. But what's the most terrifying about that is that this has been the calm.
Right?
you know what I mean? Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
What is the storm going to look
it's
like,
only
you guys?
Stormier from here.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the calm before the storm also involved like five hurricanes that decimated the entire southern coast of the U.S.
What's the real storm?
God. I think that he has been practicing various storytelling techniques because he is writing, like, we are in his reality show.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yes,
one of the tactics you use in a reality show commonly is random foreshadowing, where you have someone in some sort of stand-up interview or whatever, like, saying something creepy like this, and then you show all hell breaking loose after the commercial break.
Correct.
So we are at the commercial break right now. America is in a commercial break, and we're about to find out what happens after the commercial break.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he even knows.
Well, he might not.
I mean, I think he just is planning for a storm because he knows he's planning to cause one, but he's not sure what its makeup is yet.
Yeah. Well, the storm is what gets the good ratings.
Exactly.
But it's not the calm.
I will say that his foreshadowing in the past has been pretty on point. Like, he likes to foreshadow things by telling you what they are and then following through exactly as he said he would. So, like, he foreshadowed the shit out of Joe Arpaio's pardoning.
Yeah, that's right. He did. And then he telling us that it was going to happen.
He told us it was going to happen, and then it happened. But, and it happened exactly as he said it would happen. And everyone was like, should we believe it's going to happen? And I was like, yeah, he said it's going to happen. Right. Why are we pretending? Right. What are we don't know.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I feel like I wouldn't doubt that he has something up his sleeve.
Well, it's sad that it seems nuclear like it might be a war with North Korea. Like, that's
But a lot of nefarious things went down this week while all of this other bigger news was happening.
Yes.
And that's, I feel like we've been having to focus a lot during this administration on what secret nefarious things are happening while bigger nefarious
There's a hierarchy.
The one that made the biggest news in the aftermath of the Vegas situation was that the Trump administration is rolling back the requirement that employer-provided health insurance cover birth control.
Right.
So we already have had this rule slowly chipped away at. That was what that little Sisters of the Poor case was
and
about.
And the Hobby Lobby case.
Exactly.
And, right.
It's all about whether religious institutions and religious people should be allowed to decide what health coverage their employees get.
Right.
And in the case of Little Sisters of the Poor, it was truly like a semantics argument, because the agreement the government had come up to with religious organizations was that they would cover the difference, but the religious organizations were required to fill out a form that they opt out.
Yes.
And they didn't want to have to fill out the opt out form because they didn't want implicitly be opting their people into insurance coverage or whatever.
But what it didn't allow just any sort of private business to opt out. It was only for religious organizations. Right. Yes.
Now, any old idiot who feels like they don't think women should have health care can stop their employees from having health care coverage under their employee-provided health plan.
Yep.
So if you are just some misogynistic asshat who owns a pizza store somewhere in Dubuque, you can decide that your employees can't have contraceptive coverage.
That's right.
Now, you can't decide that your employees can't have Viagra coverage or other erectile dysfunction coverage.
Sure.
I mean, like, what I would consider the most equivalent coverage, not even equivalent because it's way less important, but like the equivalent thing that men, you know, might need that women don't need.
Yeah.
That there's no opt out for.
Yeah.
But you can opt out of you can make sure that your women have to pay a premium for being women.
Yeah.
Because punishing women is fun and nobody likes them.
Exactly. And that's all this is about, is punishment.
Obviously.
Because as you and I were talking before we started recording this, it just like this flies in the face of what they claim, you know,
they're all about.
It's sort of it's going to cause unwanted pregnancies, which, you know, they don't want women to have abortions either, obviously. So, you know,
if you dare to have sex, you better pay the price.
Right, exactly. And as we know, the main reason that women do choose to have abortions is for economic reasons.
Right.
And so if women are having unwanted pregnancies, then they're also sort of like not able to afford, you know, having the child. And then like the Republicans don't want to give any services to the women or their children either. So it's like, it just, you would think that Republicans would want to be shoving birth control down women's throats.
Yeah. It does keep women out of the public sphere to not have access to the things that allow them to be in the public sphere. I mean, these people obviously just don't want women in the workplace.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah.
And so they're preventing women from having the flexibility to be in the workplace.
Right.
You shouldn't be just like out there frittering away in the world trying to use your woman thoughts to change things.
No.
But I mean, it creates a sort of a kind of social crisis that they like that is directly related to this action that I just don't understand how they can have it both ways.
Right.
Like rhetorically speaking. Yeah. I mean, they have it both ways because they get away with it. But like, I don't understand why their rhetoric gets to have it both
ways. I know.
Because I hear people make contradictory arguments about this all the time.
Of course.
And I'm always kind of like, I don't understand how this is how your thoughts connect on this issue.
Right.
But in any case, so that's one thing. The ACLU has already filed a suit, and I think a bunch of states did as well. Yeah. HHS said they don't expect many companies to seek waivers for this. They said it would but how do they know?
How can you know?
Also, how do they know that there's not other religions besides, you know, evangelical Christians that are gunning for this as well?
See, that's the thing.
It also is important to remember that these precedents matter to LGBT people.
Yes.
Because if your religious beliefs mean that you can't provide certain kinds of healthcare to certain kinds of people,
right.
Who's to say that that doesn't extend to other people whose lifestyles you don't approve of?
Yep.
You don't approve of women having vaginas, obviously,
right.
But you might not approve of trans people having
right.
any anatomy. You might yep. not approve of gay people being gay and
right.
having lives. You might, I mean, there's yep. there's many things you might not approve of in this context for quote unquote sincerely held religious reasons
yep.
that would prevent you from all sorts of
right.
you know, providing all sorts of coverage to yeah. people that you are mandated by law to provide.
Right.
Like, it's not your decision.
Oh, yeah.
You are not required by law ever to use birth control, by the way.
No.
So you, as a person who doesn't believe in birth control, because you were probably a man, doesn't have to right. use any birth control.
Carry on not using it.
Yeah. Go live your life birth control free.
That's right.
Enjoy the freedom of being pregnant constantly.
This is what we always say about abortions.
Yeah.
Like, carry on being pro-life and
in your
not having abortions.
Yeah. You never have to have one. You only... shouldn't stop other people in other situations from yours.
That's right.
From having them.
Yes.
Some other distractions. On the diplomatic front, we have not been covering this, but it's a crazy story. On September 21st, a bunch of U.S. diplomats and their family members became ill in Cuba after what were being called sonic attacks. And so the U.S. pulled all of our non-essential personnel
yes,
out of
right.
the Cuban
yeah.
embassy. And no one's really sure what the deal is with it. There have now since been some tourists that have also claimed that they've suffered these same consequences. And I don't even know what the health effects are that they're talking
yeah.
about exactly.
Yeah.
But Trump kicked 15 Cuban diplomats out of the U.S. in retaliation this week. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
There was a weird surprise where, so the Treasury Department issued a report that recommended eliminating a bunch of Obama-era tax rules that were meant to stop people from, like, basically lying about their wealth in an effort to stop paying taxes.
True.
But one of the most controversial of those rules was a rule that was meant to crack down on corporations that shift their headquarters overseas to avoid American taxes. And specifically,
right.
they were targeting something called inversions, which is a kind of merger where a small company takes over a much bigger company, but that small company is located in, like, Ireland.
Right.
And, you know, then that big company is suddenly Irish and doesn't have
Irish,
to pay taxes
right, yes.
anymore.
Uh-huh.
So the GOP was pissed when this rule went into effect in 2016, but it was working. Like, Pfizer at one point was set to leave the U.S. It stopped them from doing that.
Yeah.
And that was going to be the biggest example of this inversion situation happening in history. So
right.
that was a big deal. Trump was expected to repeal it. And he, when they released these Treasury Department advisory, this paper, this memo, people expected it to be in that. But apparently, the Treasury Department, though it eliminated a whole bunch of these, you know, things that were meant to close loopholes,
yeah.
did not eliminate this one. Interestingly, I think because their tax plan takes so much money out of the
yes.
system
right.
that they were not going to be able to get away with it.
Right.
So obviously, there's still some other evil things that they're up to.
Of
you
course.
Know, there were rules that stopped families from undervaluing their assets for estate to avoid paying estate taxes. There, you know,
sure.
things like that
yes.
that are still going to be
yeah.
life ruiners for all of us.
Right.
But it was interesting that they didn't end up repealing that, and specifically because they're trying to promote tax reform at the moment.
Right.
Now, obviously, also this report doesn't actually change anything. These are
right.
recommendations, so we'll
yeah.
see what happens. But that was interesting. The DOJ revived a Bush-era anti-crime approach
sure.
that they
yeah.
were calling it Project Safe,
Safe
Neighborhoods.
Neighborhoods.
It was meant to target gun violence and crime, and it kind of went onto the back burner under Obama because a lot of the violent crime dropped and a lot of the violent crime programs ceased to be the primary DOJ focus
right.
because we had all this
white collar crime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so on Thursday, Sessions announced he was reinvigorating Project Safe Neighborhoods and was requiring U.S. attorneys to implement crime reduction programs and things like that and improve
sure.
their ties with police. The program
yeah.
was considered a success, but it was criticized for unfairly targeting poor communities.
That's what I was just about to say. If Sessions,
black people in jail.
If Sessions is putting this back on the books, I'm assuming it's because he wants, just, you know, much harder policing.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
what he's looking for,
well,
here, obviously.
They're trying to create a narrative that violent crime is overtaking
yes.
America because they're using this weird 1980s urban
yes.
center violent crime rhetoric.
Yes.
And so they have to justify it.
Yeah.
The DOJ shifted its legal position on transgender discrimination, i.e. it stopped considering discrimination against transgender people discrimination. That was something in 2014 that Eric Holder had issued a memo saying that discrimination on the basis of gender identity violated the Civil Rights Act of 64.
Yep.
Sessions was a critic at the time and now is in the position to
right.
stop all of that. So
yep.
he reversed that memo. And then the final secret thing that happened this week was that South Korea announced that they would be renegotiating our trade agreement with them.
Interesting.
Which Trump has been criticizing them constantly,
yes.
even though we're supposed to be their allies because
yeah.
You know, every time that they respond to North Korea, he complains that they're not responding the right way.
Right.
Because they don't want to die in a nuclear tragedy.
Right.
And he doesn't think that playing it safe is a good idea.
And also free trade.
And free trade.
Right. Yeah. He's not trying to get involved in that either.
No. So in any case, that brings us to our interview with John Heilman.
Yes.
We wanted to do something where we could focus exclusively on how people can resist the Trump agenda at the local level.
Yeah.
And why it's important to be involved at the local level. Because I think a lot of the time we get very mired in presidential politics. I mean, we obviously care a lot about what's going on in D.C. at the federal level. But there are a lot of ways in which, especially in a moment like this, local politics matter immensely.
Yeah.
And your ability to make change that is actually meaningful to your life is much greater at the local level anyway, but is especially important, and people become especially empowered to do that under a federal administration like this. So we thought, who better to talk to than the most hyper-local of mayors?
Right.
Because the interesting thing about West Hollywood is that it's in L.A. County. It's surrounded by the city of L.A., but it's its own city.
Yeah.
And we have our own city council.
City council have since the 80s.
Exactly.
Which he has been on since the 80s, since it became incorporated. So
and
he
we
was
have,
the perfect guy to tell us about it.
We have a rotating mayorship, which means that our mayor is not elected. He's just a member of the city council, and it's a new person every year.
Yeah.
But so we thought it would be really interesting to talk to him about what West Hollywood specifically is doing to resist the Trump agenda. And then also what effects
you can do.
Well, and what effects we can expect to feel that we could mitigate at the local level. So in any case, here he is. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We talk a lot on this podcast about the importance of being involved at the local level, at the hyper-local level, the importance of voting in every election, things like that. So I think to begin, what we wanted to talk about a little bit is how we can participate in acts of resistance at the local level, how local government is able to and working to resist the Trump agenda, and also create positive change in the wake of that, not just act as defense.
Sure. Yeah. And I think what you've seen is that there's been lots of really meaningful protests and events in Los Angeles. But when I got sworn in as mayor in May, I said one of the things that we have to do is be a counterexample to what's happening in Washington. And I think since we became a city in 1984, we've sort of consistently shown our values by the policies and programs we enact, the social services we provide for our residents, the kind of positive programming we do around human rights and issues of concern to our community, the fact that we have a Russian advisory board, a transgender advisory board, a lesbian and gay advisory board, women's advisory board, disabilities advisory. Those are all different ways that were designed to both empower the community and bring people together to advocate on issues of concern.
And we should note that West Hollywood has an enormous Russian population. That wasn't just... For a national audience, that was like, we have a Russian advisory board. We have a North Korean advisory board. We have a Russian advisory board. Because we have a huge Russian community in West Hollywood.
And in fact, they're not all Russian. Many of them are Russian-speaking, but they're Ukrainians, they're Georgians who immigrated here, many of them Jewish, who were escaping oppression. Yeah. We have, as with all of Southern California, we also have a growing Latino population.
I often get, I live in sort of the center of the Russian community. I get a lot of side eye because I look like I should speak Russian and I don't. A lot of that going on here. And that's my personal cross to bear here in West Hollywood.
Очень хорошо, I'll say. Very good.
We also wanted to ask, because running for office in West Hollywood is a little different, I assume, than running at the national or even the state level, because this is a fairly progressive community. It's fairly uniformly progressive. So we were sort of curious, when you run for office in West Hollywood, what are the political distinctions that you have to make, and how do you distinguish yourself from the rest of the pack?
Well, one of the interesting things you pointed out is that this is a pretty progressive community. The voter registration is overwhelmingly Democratic. We have distinctions, I would say, between people who are sort of progressive and some who are a little bit more moderate, some who may be more business friendly, some who are perceived as less business friendly. the good thing is on the core issues of equality for LGBT people and women's rights and reproductive rights, for the most part, everyone is pretty uniformly in agreement on those issues.
Yeah.
But I would say what really distinguishes people is the commitment they've made to the community, their experience, whether they've been tested in some way, whether they've had to take hard stands on issues. You know, fortunately for me as an incumbent, most people love the city and they enjoy it. They love the programs, the services that are provided. So they're going to tend to favor the people who've been doing the work. So that's a good thing for me.
Right. And you've been on the city council since 85, I believe, right?
84,
when you became a city. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Except for 3 months. But other than that, I've been on
the dark 3 months.
Yes.
That being said, would you have any advice for someone who hasn't made a run like that or who hasn't necessarily had the opportunity to be tested?
I always tell people, look at ways to get involved. I mean, there are lots of ways. Being on a board or a commission, serving on the Chamber of Commerce, serving in a nonprofit organization. There are lots of ways to demonstrate that you care about the city. And I think that's what people really want to see when people are running for office.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah. Hyperlocal politics are also interesting and kind of fun to be involved in. I've learned that here. I've also learned that in New York, where I'm from. That's, you know, something that we've talked about with my mother on the podcast because she's involved in hyperlocal block association and politics.
And it's almost like a soap opera to some degree
exactly.
because you see
the same people
coming to council
we
meetings.
Love the best getting, part.
We love
the
getting,
gossip.
I was going to say, we love getting all the stories, whether it's your mother or whoever.
Hyperlocal politics are filled with melodrama in the best possible way. We can't recommend that enough.
And of course, we're in, you know, Hollywood, the entertainment capital.
Sure. Yes. Uh-huh.
I've had people come up to me and say, I was watching your show. I'm like, it's not a show.
It's the city council meeting.
And then they said, no, it wasn't your show. It was the spinoff. I'm like, no, they were talking about the planning commission.
Yes.
I'm like, no, that's not a spinoff.
Oh, gosh.
This is not.
That's so funny. Well, having the president that we have right now, I feel like has everybody in a different sort of mindset as to what politics is. Probably
who's better qualified to make politics into the entertainment that it should be than the people who live here in Hollywood.
Right.
So we vote off-cycle in West Hollywood for city council, and that took a lot of people by surprise. Earlier this year, we were all kind of reeling from the tremendous losses of the election in November. Why do we do that, and do you think that discourages or encourages involvement?
I think it actually discourages because people are used to voting in November.
Yeah.
The good news is, and the reason we did that is that's how state law governs small cities. We're considered a general law city, so the election schedule and the structure of the government is kind of set for us by state law. But state law recently changed, so municipalities have to move their elections to a general election.
Oh.
And not the next election, but the one after that, our city council elections will move to a November election. So November 2020 will be the first time we're voting at the same time as a presidential election. I think that will just increase turnout.
Absolutely.
Yeah, turnout at local elections across the nation is not great, but in Los Angeles and California on the whole, it has been just really abysmal lately.
And I think for a group of people that are looking to be involved,
right?
I mean, Californians are generally politically engaged.
And
people,
we have always felt like that was one of the things that at least caused that in off-year elections.
Well, on top of it, campaign consultants will tell you, go towards the people who voted consistently. So people who haven't regularly voted, most candidates aren't really reaching out to them.
Right.
We changed our tactics in this last election, and we reached out to a lot of people who were not regular municipal voters to try to get them engaged.
Well, I feel like that was probably important, especially in this last election, because while we, as you said, were still reeling a little bit, there was probably more interest in this last election than some previous city elections.
Absolutely. And I think we've seen this all across the country. People who were engaged as part of the presidential election afterwards wanted to continue to be engaged. They were horrified by Trump being elected, and they decided they wanted to either run for office themselves or be involved at the local level. It's actually encouraged a lot of participation.
That's great. Now, knowing that the next time that we're going to be voting with when the general is November 2020, how do we get people to pay attention to the next election?
Right.
this is an ongoing problem, I'm sure. But
exactly. We'll actually have a municipal election in March of 2019.
Right.
That'll be the last one we have before we switch to all November elections. It's hard to get people engaged because the media, unfortunately, does not cover local activities very well. Unless there's some scandal or crisis, they'll cover it.
Absent of a sex scandal.
They don't cover anything that happens on the day-to-day basis. And so it's hard for people to be informed voters and engaged. So as a city, we're trying to do more reaching out to people online and in other methods to at least make sure they're aware of what's taking place.
What are your thoughts on the jungle primary system generally in California?
I have kind of mixed views about that. Obviously, in some districts, that means no Democrat gets on the ballot. Right. And in other districts, no Republican gets on the ballot. But I guess that reflects the politics of that particular district.
Sure.
But it also means that in a lot of places, there really is no contest. The incumbent is really going to just march to re-election.
And no discussion. Right?
I was going to say, that can minimize discourse, potentially. Anyway, it doesn't necessarily have to, but I mean, it can, certainly.
So I'm a little bit torn by it. But I also feel that sometimes, maybe that works to our advantage. If you're a progressive, that means that certain seats are automatically safe, and then you can target those where you think you can pick up a seat. But obviously the converse is true, too.
Right.
The other side doesn't have to play defense everywhere.
Yeah. West Hollywood itself, we're a sanctuary city, I believe, correct?
We've been a sanctuary city long before Trump.
Right, I was going to say, it's sort of... The city was founded on it, on being one, whether officially or not, I suppose. What does that mean for us? And also, I believe we filed a lawsuit,
joined a lawsuit, right?
Can you sort of talk about that and what it could mean if some of that funding becomes an issue for sanctuary cities?
For us, the funding issue is not that big of an issue. We don't get that much in funding from the federal government. We get a little bit of money for law enforcement and a little bit of money for community development block grants, but it is not a major source of our funds. And frankly, even if we were to lose those monies, for us, it's a principle that we don't want to give up. For the bigger cities, it's a bigger challenge.
Sure.
But it's clear that what the Trump administration has been doing is targeting people, and a lot of the targeting is based on religion. It's based on race and ethnicity. It has nothing to do with, some kind of danger to the country.
Right.
And obviously, for people in other parts of the country, they may not have the familiarity with immigrants as we do here in Los Angeles. So we're used to dealing with immigrants. We know that they're not a threat to us.
They are us.
So our sanctuary policy is designed to recognize that we don't want the federal government coming in and, targeting people. From a law enforcement standpoint, you want people in the country, whether they're here lawfully or not, whether they have documents or not, you want them to be able to report crimes and cooperate with prosecution when they are witnesses to crime. And if you don't, if you start targeting them, they're not going to cooperate with law enforcement on issues that really matter.
It doesn't help the general public safety.
No.
Yeah, exactly. It diminishes it, in fact.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I don't know that we've actually discussed that aspect of immigration on this podcast before, but that's maybe the heart of the point. Like with many social issues, considering the sort of safety of the whole is important. We talk about it a lot with healthcare because, if you don't take care of the health of the entire community, you end up paying for that in other ways as a community, in terms of safety, in terms of quality of life, in terms of all sorts of things. But that's true on a lot of, about most social issues.
That's why a lot of law enforcement, police chiefs and the like have supported sanctuary policies.
Right.
Some obviously, they're anti-immigrant or they believe immigrants are responsible
Arizona.
For crime.
Right. Ohio.
Sure. I think a lot of sort of professional police chiefs recognize that if you're going to turn immigrants over to the federal government because they don't have documentation, you're never going to be able to solve the real crime problems in your community, because you need those individuals to come forward when they've been victimized, when they're witnesses. And if they fear that you're going to turn them over to the federal government, they're not going to do it.
On another hot-button federal issue, what happens in West Hollywood if Obamacare or the ACA is repealed? What are the effects at the sort of hyper-local level here?
The good news is that a lot of our elderly population are covered by Medicare. So at least now, they're not targeting outright Medicare. So that would not likely change for many of those individuals. But for other vulnerable populations in our city, the LGBT community, transgender individuals, people who are not yet seniors, there are a lot of people who have been relying on Obamacare. And we have a lot of people who work as independent contractors.
Yes.
So they don't get medical care through their employer, and they've been able to purchase it. And if it's somebody living with HIV or some other kind of disability or pre-existing condition, they're not going to be able to get that kind of coverage if Obamacare is eliminated. So we've been looking at what we would need to do as a city to fill the gap if that were to occur. But fortunately, so far, it hasn't. I mean, there are reforms that need to occur with respect to Obamacare. I think everyone agrees that some of it isn't working as intended. But kicking 20 million people off of healthcare is not a solution.
A reform that is necessary for the saving of Obamacare.
Right. Yes.
What we need is what other, sort of civilized countries have, which is national healthcare.
Yeah,
and everyone has healthcare, and it is just automatic. It is sort of your birthright in that country, and it works, and they have better healthcare outcomes than our current system, which costs way more than what they're spending. So something needs to change.
Are there any discussions happening? And I assume this, West Hollywood's a pretty small city, so probably not just at the West Hollywood level. But I know, like, at one point, when Anthony Weiner ran for mayor in New York City, he ran on bringing Medicare for All to New York City. Are there any discussions at, in the sort of regional level, but not the state level? We know this. We know what happened with the state bill, but at sort of a more regional level about how we could bring Medicare for All to the greater LA area.
I'm not prepared to give up on the state effort to
create healthcare. No, we should definitely.
I mean, and in fairness to the legislature, I know there were a lot of people who said you got to vote on it right now.
Right.
It's a very complicated issue, and developing a bill and getting buy-in from all of the constituencies does take time. But I remember when Sheila Kuehl was in the legislature, she's now our county supervisor, she had proposed something along those lines. When you look at the numbers, it makes a lot of sense. There's probably over 50% of the population is already covered by some kind of governmental program.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's not like a huge step to say, okay, let's do this in a more efficient way and let's everyone have coverage. But then you have to deal with how do you adjust the employers who are providing healthcare.
Sure.
The whole healthcare based on employment, just, frankly, why is it the employer's responsibility?
Right.
Many of them don't have the wherewithal to monitor all the changes in insurance plans. It's a big burden for them, too.
Oh, it really, I mean, I work at a small business, and I know when we were going through all of the changes with the ACA, I mean, we basically had to hire staff to basically be
to
able
figure
to
out what you were going to do about healthcare.
To sift through all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we had to put more people on the payroll to figure out what to how to navigate that whole situation,
well,
which is It's bonkers.
In many ways, you know, Medicare for All from a small business perspective is very pro-business, which which it's rarely pitched as, but is sort of the case, unless you're, you know, unless you're Goldman Sachs or some, you know, someone who can affect, you know, electoral outcomes with your influence. Yeah.
But for so many of our local businesses, I would assume that they would, they would love to not be having to, by law, cover those people.
It's a huge cost burden.
A cost burden. And then you have people who probably should no longer be working or should be working someplace else, but they stay in a job that they're not really committed to because they don't want to lose their health care coverage.
And then one final question.
Again, sort of at the national level, we have a new makeup of the Supreme Court right now. What's the local concern in regards to that?
Well, there are a couple of cases that they are already reviewing or will be reviewing this term and hearing oral argument on. One of them has to do with a religious exemption to non-discrimination laws. The famous baker who didn't want to serve two gay men who wanted a wedding cake. There's another case that could cripple unions, public employee unions. Yeah. Those could have, you know, obviously significant impact. The idea that our non-discrimination laws would be gutted by this so-called religious exemption, it would allow businesses to discriminate because they don't believe in equality of the races, or they don't believe that women should be outside of the home. Right. There are religions that are very conservative, or religions, some that I don't want to question the validity of any religious beliefs, but they're certainly not compatible with the values of this country. So are we going to give all of those people a free pass from our laws that prohibit employment discrimination and prohibit discrimination in services?
Yeah.
Terrifying times. Thank you so much for coming on. We've never had a truly sort of like local politician on the podcast before, and I feel like we've had a lot of...
something we talk about so often.
We talk about it all the time.
This has been fun.
Yeah.
Well, let me know anytime I'll come back, and I'll bring some of my colleagues. Okay. I can only bring one, though, because if we have three people and we're talking
then
about...
Then you're in a meeting.
We're in a meeting. Yeah,
sure. Okay. Right.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Yeah. So thanks so much, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Right. Thank you.
Thanks.
So that was fun. We're probably going to try to have him come back at some point to talk about issues, you know, to talk about local issues outside of the Trump administration agenda and how local government, you know, deals with quality of life issues that are not political in a political way, because that's what they do.
Like development is a huge issue, and, you know, affordable housing in West Hollywood. So we would love to get his take on that. So we hope he will rejoin us.
Exactly. And then speaking of local governance, we're going to do one of our rare wading into international
foreign
politics moments, because this situation in Catalonia is fascinating.
Yeah. We usually only get into foreign affairs if we feel like we have to, or if something just really speaks to us. And this is the latter.
This is the latter.
Yeah.
So Catalonia is a region in Spain. It's where Barcelona is. So on October 1st, Catalonians, who have long been sort of like torn about how much they love Spain, held a secessionist referendum vote.
Yes.
And
Illegal vote.
Yeah. Spain calls this vote illegal.
Yes.
And did not sanction this vote. But Catalonians are a rebellious bunch, and they did it anyway.
They had it anyway and decided they wanted to leave.
Yeah. The pro-succession side won.
Yeah.
So now we're all kind of waiting to see what happens. Catalonia's leader in the Spanish government, Carles Puigdemont, he's got a very confusing name, could decide to either push Catalonia to actually try to declare independence and cause a constitutional crisis in Spain, or he could decide not to do that. But Catalonians have long seen themselves as living under foreign domination.
Yeah.
They don't speak the same language as Spain.
Right.
They educate their children in Catalan. They have long considered themselves a distinct culture and that descended from the Romans distinctly. Their language is not even the closest connected to Spanish. Yeah. I think it's closest to Latin and Italian. Oh. Have long had this sort of rebellious spirit in Catalonia.
And it's really coming out right now, because it's fairly chaotic over there.
Yeah.
Because there have been a lot of protests, you know, on both sides. I mean, there was a huge protest against this just this weekend.
Yeah, Catalonia itself,
the Spanish people, yeah,
is very split about this. And policing has become a very politicized issue because the Spanish National Police came in to try to shut down this vote, and suddenly there was all they were very violent towards the people that were trying to vote, because even voting was an act of protest to some degree.
Exactly, yes.
But the Catalan police force stood down. They were also ordered to stop this vote, and they just chose not to do it.
Yeah.
And so there's now this sort of breakdown where the National Police and the Catalan police are on two different sides of this issue. The National Police have come in essentially as an occupying force.
Yeah.
They are now people are not happy to have them there. And I think the Times said it best, where they tried to apologize for how violently they had come in. And the Times said the apology does not seem to have been accepted. Angry residents have insulted the children of officers. Police forces brought in from across Spain found their hotels surrounded by angry residents who protested loudly and forced the officers, some of whom responded by spitting out the windows to find other accommodations apart from population centers. They are basically having like a crisis that has reinvigorated all of these historic discussions about what it is to be Spanish, what happened during Franco's, you know, what happened during the Spanish Civil War, and and whether
that was
or not
the last huge crisis that they had.
Exactly. And that was a huge enough crisis that we sent volunteer, you know, brigades to go fight in that war.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fallout has been immense. The Catalonia's police chief has appeared in the national court in Madrid. He's faced accusations of sedition. He denied that he'd refused to help the national police, but no one really knows to what degree his police force is even willing to cooperate with him, even if he were to issue orders to participate. So everyone in Spain is angry about this.
Yeah.
And the Catalan leader has asked finally for the national police to leave.
To go home. Yeah.
But they have basically been holed up in a cruise ship that has cartoons on the side of it because they've been trying to hide in plain sight. And they had to put tarps up over some of the cartoons because the yellow canary Tweety Pie, who's a cartoon character, I guess, became a symbol of the secessionist movement and started appearing on TV, on T-shirts and on walls, like graffiti and stuff like that.
Oh.
And so they are having, so they're like amid a true sort of international, national crisis.
Yeah.
Because this is not, this has sort of been under the surface in Catalonia for a long time, and they have done sort of rebellious things. They have a fairly autonomous government there because they were causing so much trouble in Spain. And so they have done a lot of fairly rebellious things, like the fact that they don't educate their kids
in Spanish. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Spanish.
I mean, to a certain degree, they sort of already feel as though they have been operating, you know, outside of, of Spain.
Spain proper.
So this wasn't really a stretch for them. This sort of seemed like the next natural step, but it has, you know, caused all of this chaos.
Well, this is the kind of thing that you read about in a history book and you're like, interesting, but you don't imagine it happens in real life. Like a part of a country trying to secede.
Right.
Like I joke all the time about New York City trying to secede, but we've never like actually gotten close to do. We didn't ever vote on it.
Right.
Like this is like,
yeah, it's why we get so excited when California starts talking about wanting to secede, even though it's crazy and it's never going to happen. But it's like, that's thrilling. Just
but I mean,
the thought of it. But this is like,
this is what happens.
Yeah.
The national police force comes in and tries to occupy your territory, essentially. And your local police force is forced to choose sides. And if your local police force, that's what I think what's telling here is that the local police force chose the other side.
Right.
They chose a secessionist side. And so that is an interesting, an interestingly credible movement now.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be sort of considered this like fringe thing.
Yeah.
Like that kind of lends a sort of credibility to it that it did not have until recently. And this is a police force that was just praised for their handling of that Barcelona terrorist attack.
Right.
So, I mean, this is, they used to, you know, be shit on by everyone all the time, but this is an interesting time for them to
be
in the focus because we were just calling them heroes.
Right. I would really love to get involved in some sort of secessionist movement just so I could have some sort of fun mascot, like a yellow canary.
I know. I'd love to have a rebellious t-shirt of some sort.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I would like to avoid the violent part, though.
Yeah.
I'm not so great with police batons.
No.
I really, I'm famous for slinking away in a protest as soon as anything gets slightly hairy.
Sure. Yeah.
But this is certainly kind of like, it's certainly watching history unfold before your very eyes.
That's right.
It's fascinating. And in final news, Trump is feuding, as usual, with everyone.
With everyone.
On Twitter.
Members of either his own administration or his own party, which Those are my favorite of his feuds.
Obviously. Well, also, yeah. I'm, like, not interested in him feuding with Democrats.
No.
Like,
I mean,
He is feuding innately with Democrats. Yeah. We don't need him
he's
to have a
He's getting along
feud.
Better with Chuck and Nancy than he is with Rex Tillerson right now.
Well, Rex Tillerson thinks he's a moron.
Yes, he does. Well.
And Rex Tillerson was forced to hold an impromptu press conference earlier this week to rebut an NBC report that he had threatened to resign and called Trump a moron.
Right. And I believe wasn't when it was reported that he had called him a moron, like, the person who reported that actually, like, clarified the statement and said actually what he said was that he was a fucking moron?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So, not just a moron. Not just a plain run-of-the-mill moron.
No, fucking moron.
But a fucking moron. Yeah.
This is the most hilarious reason that you would ever have to call a press conference.
Right.
I need the press to come so I can not quite deny that I called Trump a moron, but claim I support him.
Right.
Which is what he did.
Yeah.
And then Trump on Saturday said he'd like Tillerson to be a little tougher.
Oh,
but insisted that their relationship was solid.
Take less naps.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like him to take less naps too, by the way.
So would
if that is what he's referring to, if the toughness he's referring to is his inability to stay awake, I'm for it.
Pro Trump here on this one.
I'm pro Trump on this specific point, if that's what he means.
But also pro Tillerson, because definitely a fucking moron.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's a complicated it's complicated really to choose sides in this feud.
Right, it is.
So in any case, because they insisted that he's definitely not leaving and is securely in his position, I think he's
leaving.
He should
be fired within the week, probably.
I think within the month, certainly. Like, this man is on his way out.
Yeah.
Which leads me to wonder who is going to be our Secretary of State.
God. Someone terrible, because Rex Tillerson was terrible enough.
Yes. Well, and it's not going to be John Cornyn. I mean, Bob Corker.
Bob Corker, no. Yeah. Well, and the part of the reason why this Bob Corker fight is happening is because Trump claims that Corker wanted to be Secretary of State.
Right.
And he, as you said, yes, is definitely not going to be Secretary of State now, because a Twitter war erupted just today, Sunday, actually, between Trump and Corker.
Yeah.
And this has been brewing for a while, because Corker was an early supporter of Trump, actually.
And then an early turnarounder of his supporter.
Yes. Exactly.
In late September, Corker announced he was going to be retiring.
Yes.
And the reason he said he was retiring was sort of a veiled jab at Trump, because he basically said, I want to be able to act independently and do the best I can for the next 15 months without bullshit going on.
Yeah.
What he basically said was, I want to be an independent operator for the next 15 months.
Yeah.
And so this morning, for some reason, Donald just was up early trying to tweet about it and tweeted that the reason that Corker decided not to run again was that he had denied Corker's request to endorse him.
Yes.
For an endorsement. Corker's staff claims that that's not true. And not only that it's not true, that Trump called and begged him to run again.
I'm sure
and
he did.
Then claimed he would definitely endorse him.
Of course.
Feel like it's hilarious that there are two political offices claiming such dramatically like opposite stories here.
Yeah.
That's juvenile already.
Completely.
And then also, he said he'd rejected Corker's bid to be Secretary of State and blamed him for the Iran deal, which we know he hates.
Right.
So he's real mad at Bob Corker.
Yeah.
Then in response, Corker tweeted, it's a shame the White House has become an adult daycare center. Someone obviously missed their shift this morning.
Yeah.
Everyone is a fucking comedian in this administration.
I know.
And so,
man,
politics in any
case, on Twitter.
Corker's office is claiming the opposite. That's intrigue.
Yep.
I think that Trump is upset because Corker's been complaining about his temperament for the last week.
Yeah.
He was not criticizing Trump, but complimenting Tillerson, Mattis, and Kelly, saying they had, quote, helped separate our country from chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And then Corker had also said that Tillerson wasn't receiving the support he needed from Trump. This was on the aftermath of the Tillerson blow up. But so in any case, the interesting thing is that Corker is, his vote is really needed on this tax reform package. So,
he's going to vote for that. Get out of, come on.
I feel like if he's the kind of person that is referring to the White House as an adult daycare center.
That's true.
And also he's also needed to help negotiate this Iran re-deal.
Well,
because
and
he's the only one who knows about it.
Yeah, and one of the things that we didn't actually have is one of the secret things that happened last week is that Trump actually said that he was not going to recertify that deal.
Exactly.
Because as part of that deal, every 90 days, they basically have to recertify it. Like, it's not going to fully go away if he doesn't recertify it, but basically, like, they just have to say that both sides are, you know, keeping up with the deal.
Exactly.
And all of the other countries have already said that Iran is keeping up with their deal. But apparently, when it comes up the next time, Trump is going to say Iran is not keeping up with their end of the deal, probably based on little to no information that he just wants to say that they're not.
What an adventure.
Yeah, so we do need Corker on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so it's going to be interesting to see how it all goes down.
Yikes. Maybe Corker will want to get in on the John McCain trolling of the administration
that's
game.
What I'm hoping.
Right?
I'm hoping a bunch of stodgy old white men with slightly mavericky streaks. And right. We know Corker has
one. Who are either not running for re-election or are dying.
Exactly.
Can sort of decide that, fuck it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This feels like the beginning of Corker deciding, fuck it. And I don't think he'll be as exciting as John McCain because
he won't be.
He's not a natural maverick.
I was going to say, he's already
not a troll.
Less exciting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. He's never going to reach those heights of excitement.
No.
But I feel like he could be someone who kind of slyly, in slow and exciting, you know, ways joins Team McCain.
I'm here for it.
And I am ready to overreact to every small moment that indicates that.
I don't think it's going to happen on the tax bill.
I don't think it's going to happen on the tax bill. I think it's just an interesting time for Trump to be picking people off.
Right, exactly. From his own party.
From his own party.
When he only has 52 votes in the Senate, and he's, you know, you can't pick people off. You can't pick that many people off from your own party.
What Corker could do is decide to get some really minor piece of legislation that is related to this tax reform bill like stuck in his craw, and then hold everything up by demanding something annoying that is going
to,
that no one's going to want. Like, there are ways he could be trouble here.
Yeah.
And I hope he is.
Yeah.
That's the news this week.
There it is.
Next week. Will we make it to next week?
I don't know. The storm is coming.
I know. Exactly. we'll let you know if we find out what the storm is.
God.
Follow us on Twitter. I don't know.
If a nuclear bomb goes off, you'll know.
That's right. Yeah, you can rest assured that you'll find out about
That's the storm.
Exactly. But until then, and hopefully we'll make it to then, have a good week.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.